Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, this special edition, we have some special guests who literally there isn't very much times when the cybersecurity industry has the ability to take its best and make a comparison. How do you know where we stand and who is the best in our industry? One of those is the NetWar events that's put on by the SANS Institute.
We've been doing NetWar's core tournaments for about 4 years now, and they've grown bigger and bigger all the time. It's a competition, so people are vying.
And today we are having some representatives, not the whole team, from the winning team of the last SANS Institute NetWars. On today we have Quinn Kozminsk, who is the dark lord of the network, he likes to be called. He works for Riverbed and also is one of our top professors here at Colorado Tech. And Michael Enger, who works for a Fortune 100 manufacturing company as a security analyst. But both of them, exceptional, best of the best. Quinn, Michael, welcome today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. So we want to know, first of all, you know, we're here to inspire the next generation of cybersecurity workers, teams, competitors. And we want to know from each of you, how did you get to the position where you're at? Give us your background. I guess first, Quinn, give me some. You know, how were you as a little kid? What interest did you have that got you to the point where you're the top leading team at NetWars?
I got in a lot of trouble when I was growing up. Not that I was a bad kid, but I like to look at things differently from other people. I like to understand how things work, and that doesn't mean that I was some propeller head that was just this font of knowledge. It's just I was always curious. You know, how does this function? How does this work? Why does it work? And oftentimes it was chasing down subjects and topics that other people would look at you funny and be like, why? Why does that matter? And frankly, when you're older and you're working in cybersecurity, stuff like that is obviously very, very useful, because it's those areas that people go, well, why would you want to know about that, that often provide the greatest avenue for success in hacking and security.
All right. Michael, tell us about your beginnings here.
Sure. A lot of it's honestly the same, is that thirst for knowledge and that natural born curiosity. And one of my favorite stories I like to share with people, how I kind of got into the cybersecurity world, if you will, as well. I was real young, and my dad had a computer, and I liked to use it, liked to play games and everything, and he was always very protective of it. Didn't want us to be on it without his permission, and this and that and the other thing, and he had he put a power on password through the BIOS, and he thought that was going to stop everything, because he knew that if I popped the CMOS battery, it would wipe out the password, but he would tell that I wiped the password out. I think I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I'd saved up my allowance money, and I rode into town after school, and I picked up a fine tip dry erase marker, and I went home and I put a small dot on every single key on the keyboard, and I was like, hey Dad, I need to write a report for school, can you come type the password in? And he comes and he rubs the dot off of the keys where he typed the password in, and then all I had to do was unscramble like a 6-character password, and I had that same password for maybe 5-7 years. And I actually just shared that with him a couple Thanksgivings ago. And he goes, you got to be kidding me. He's like, I never changed that password. and that was really kind of, it was really getting around the protections that my dad put in place was my birth into, the cybersecurity world.
Yeah. I bet, Quinn, you have an example of that too. What was the first game or the first toy you ever tore apart and decomposed?
Well, I the statute of limitations for the law might be about 10 years, but for the stuff that you do with your parents, there's really no statute of limitations. So as long as nobody tells my parents this story, sure. My dad, similar story. Growing up, I grew up around computers, although they were much older and less useful than Mike's computers. But my dad had a system way, way, way back in the day, and I wanted to get into it. And unfortunately, I was slightly more destructive than him, and I managed to get in, but I tore up the UI that he used to get into the DOS interface. And he was coming home in about 2.5 hours, and I had 2.5 hours to figure out how to recode everything and get it functional from a boot perspective. And for me, that was the big one. The second one was, and I'll be completely honest, and when my parents and I sit back and talk about, well, how did you get into computers and security and all that, I can lay it all at the feet. The big genesis of what made me get serious about technology was Doom, like the old school ID software game. When that first came out, it was fun to play single player, but everybody wanted to play multiplayer. And you run into two problems if you want to play multiplayer. When Doom first came out, it was in DOS, not Windows. So you had to be able to set up a network from a command prompt, through DOS, which virtually nobody at that age group knew how to do. And second, you had to get everybody's computers together in a local area because nobody played Doom over a modem. Mm-hmm. So I was the only one out of all of my friends that actually bothered to sit down and learn how to configure networking at a DOS command prompt. And to this day, I can remember all the commands because I typed them so many freaking times so that we could play networked with each other.
That is awesome. Well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back after these messages.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We are still talking to Quinn and Michael, the NetWars winning team for the SANS Institute NetWars this year. We wanted to, first of all, we introduced you. We heard the background. Tell us about how and what it takes to win top team at NetWars.
Best thing I would say is you gotta want it. Like I tell all of my students, when they say, "Well, how am I going to win this competition?" Well, the goal when you first get started is not to win. I mean, you might win, sure, but the goal is not to win. The goal is to learn. And if you lose, what's the worst that's going to happen? Are they going to take you out back and break your knees? No, you just won't win. But you will have learned stuff from it. And so the advice I give people is compete as regularly and as often as time will allow. There are tons of CTF events going on all over the world at any time. And a lot of them are online. Some of them require you to be in person. Mm-hmm. The online ones, that's how I got started, is I signed up for as many free ones or low-cost ones as I possibly could. And I just got better and better and better at it. There is a huge community of Capture the Flag events for hacking-type events that are out there. There's offense-oriented ones. There's defense-oriented ones. There's some that are a mix of both. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, you learn so much by losing because there's all these categories where you know where you're weak. Like for me, my biggest weakness is reverse engineering. And it's not because I can't handle it. It's because I just haven't invested the time necessary to get better at it. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I guess that's why you have a team. Everybody has a little different strengths too, right?
Exactly. I mean, when we showed up at SANS, Jonathan and I, we were like, well, who can we get on this team that can fill the gaps that we don't know? And I'll let Mike speak to it. But one of the things that we liked about him when we bumped into him in the 542 class, was he's got a strong background of PowerShell, and he's got a really good analytical mind.
And that's when we invited him to join us. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, this is during actually our 542 class. One of the extra challenges in the back of the book was to basically hack a little small web game for Snake. And long story short, when I was going through it, I figured out the pattern that the hashing algorithm was using for the score, but for whatever reason, I couldn't figure out the actual algorithm or the math behind it. But what I could do is I could reproduce it using PowerShell, so that's what I did instead. You know, it's kind of, there's more ways to, you know, more than one way to solve a single problem, and, you know, I saw the pattern and I recognized it, but, you know, I just didn't sit down and crack out the math, but I was just like, you know what, I can make this, you know, I can run a two-line script in PowerShell, and it'll iterate through and it'll give me the same result, and that's what I ended up doing instead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it came in handy, and that's when Jonathan and Quinn walked over, and they're like, hey, you should join our team for NetWars, you know, and it was exciting because that's day one. I was looking for a team as well because, you know, I wanted to get in there and, you know, and actually have a good chance this year.
Yeah, and that would kind of fall under a replay attack. So you were able to replay it, produce the pattern, and get in there. So.
Yep.
So now these type of events, capture the flags. You guys all work in cybersecurity for a company doing some kind of either analyst work or penetration testing. How much of this, things that you take from Capture the Flag, from competitive nature events in cyber, relay over to things you do on the job?
Mike, do you want to answer this first or shall I?
Sure, yeah. So a lot of it that, because I'm actually on the defense team at work, and I typically go to the pen testing courses at SANS or, you know, doing the capture of the flags on the offense side. You know, it was very early on that I kind of learned that offense informs the defense. So I go through and I'll, you know, I look at ways that I would hack into a system or how I would compromise or, you know, pivot. And then I sort of, you know, knowing what I can do with it, I try to expand upon that and figure out what can other people do with it, or, you know, where does it end, and I take that back to work, and the stuff that I've learned going through the NetWars and going through just other CTFs that I've done, I kind of take that back and I look at our network and I say, okay, where are the similarities, or how can I take those same attack methods and apply them here, and then in the same turn, what do I need to do to defend against that, and put those security controls in place.
So there's a big correlation on your end, you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay. Quinn, your thoughts?
I will say this. A lot of the scenarios that are in NetWars and any other CTFs are fictionalized for the sake of providing, you know, an atmosphere for the game and make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
But almost all of the stuff that you do in these CTFs is real world applicable to one degree or another. I am not exaggerating that. There is almost everything that I've had to do for these CTFs at some point in the 20 some odd years that I've been working, I have used in real life. And that's what makes it come alive for me, is going, I remember doing something like this. I've done this before. Let me see if I can dig through my notes, because I keep copious notes of stuff that I've done in previous penetration tests, tips and tricks to myself, so that I can remember. I have a running playbook I keep in Google Docs where I add things, and it's many, many, many pages long. But, you know, it's got all these little things in it, and sometimes I'll go, yeah, I can remember how to do that. DNS brute force with this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I remember how I use parallels to make this faster this time instead of just using a single thread. Okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing. You know, I just go back to my notes and I find it. You'd be amazed. Like a great example of this, Over the Wires Bandit. I aim all of my students, I have them run through that as far as they can possibly get. Because a great example of this, one of my students who recently passed OSCP came back and told me one of the levels on Bandit, he directly used one of those commands on one of the machines he had to compromise in the labs to prepare for OSCP. Mm-hmm. I mean, you never know when this stuff comes back to become useful. All of it is real-world applicable.
And OSCP, explain what that is.
Offensive Security Certified Professional. It's a certification that requires you to actually pass it by doing and not just memorizing and regurgitating information. You have to hack 5 machines within 24 hours to pass the certification exam.
Do you see that as the premium certification that people that are in the penetration testing industry should have?
Yes, and it's less for simply so you can hold the certification. I mean, it's just a piece of paper, but it is a phenomenal demonstration that you actually know how to do this stuff. It's not just these are not just abstract concepts that you've memorized. And, you know, if you're in a job interview, somebody says, well, what's a buffer overflow? You can take it a step further and say, here are the tools that I use, here's the methodology that I like to use, and here are the applications I've compromised in the past. Because these are things that you have to do to pass the OSCP. So it's by doing. And I honestly, everybody that's listening, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I'll tell you what, once you've got OSCP, you can tell a difference in your game. You've stepped it up, and you definitely know that you know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, let's take a break real quick, and we'll be back to talk with the leading team for NetWars on, you know, what is the current state of cybersecurity and what to look for.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Welcome back. We're talking with Quinn Kodzmitz and Michael Enger, still from the leading team at NetWars this year, about, you know, what their experience has been in cybersecurity and what recommendations they make for the young people. But now we want to know, you know, from the experts and basically some of the experts in the world, the leading experts, what do you see in the current state of cybersecurity in both the industry that where you work and the industry as a whole?
That's a loaded question. It's the landscape of cybersecurity is constantly changing. It's every time, you know, most other industries, like example for electronic engineering, you know, is the transistor. That was a sea change. That made a humongous difference in from moving from the tube to modern electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Cybersecurity has one of those sea changes about every 6 months. something big happens, something huge comes along, or, you know, even more annoying, some small thing that wasn't really a big deal 20 years ago turns out to be a really, really big deal. Examples would be shell shock, you know, the bug that sat for how long it didn't get patched, or NTFS name filing bugs that are even now able to crash Windows 7 and 8.1, even 10 that they're fixed because of by accident, but, you know, stuff like that. Being able to look at those small things and recognize them for how big they really can be and then correcting them is a big deal for the security industry.
You know, I always kind of liken it to the Battlestar Galactica quote, all of this has happened before and will happen again. You know, it's very cyclical, it seems. You just kind of look at, you know, what's happened and, you know, with the MS-08067 and now the MS, you know, 17010, you know, and then the recent Samba exploit, it's the same stuff. And there's one of my SANS instructors, I can't take credit for this one, but he had said that it, you know, it's not really an advanced persistent threat, it's more of like the average phishing threat. And that's, I mean, you know, it's the low-hanging fruit, you know, the crime of opportunity kind of thing. It's the path of least resistance. Why would you beat your head against a perimeter when you can sort of send a phishing email in lawn dart right into user space?
Mm-hmm.
You send enough of them, somebody's going to click on it. It just takes one. So, you know, that's a lot of what I've seen personally is you get a ton of phishing emails and you have to really hammer away at the end user awareness and all the training and you know, making sure you have security controls in place to, you know, to help protect against that.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that, you know, I hear so many people say, you know, the cyber landscape is going to get continuously worse. It's going to be a disaster. But at the same sense, there's the thought that maybe we're just at the beginning of an industry, and a lot of things will work themselves out. New products will come along. You know, we'll get this better. What do you guys think about that, either side of that?
Products don't make security better. People make security better. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and selling shiny toys to enterprises doesn't make things better. It is the skill of the people that makes the biggest difference. And the biggest problem for cybersecurity, above all, is a lack of competent talent.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people so many times, you have all these other industries that people work in all over the world, where you've got 10 people fighting for, you know, for one job, or 100 people fighting for one job. Cybersecurity, we've got the opposite problem. We have 100 people who have their pick of 1,000 different jobs. And employers are slowly catching on to this, but there are a lot of people in cybersecurity that frankly shouldn't be in cybersecurity. They're chasing the easy money. And it's competent people that will have the pick of any job for the rest of their career. If you know what you're doing, you don't have to be the best, but you've got to understand what you're doing, and you will do well with any tool that you are given. It is a poor craftsman that blames his tools, and that is as true here as it is in construction.
Okay, so if we look at what are those skill sets that we're talking about here, are we talking about technical people? Are we talking about skills in cyber that might be in the business, in human resources and training? You know, give us a rounded, are we just talking mostly about technical people that can do what we're talking about here with you guys being on the, you know, the hacking teams?
Well, I'm just going to give one example, and I'm going to hand it over to Mike, because I happen to know for a fact that he really understands what I'm talking about in this. Understanding how things work is the single most important thing you can bring to bear in your career. You don't have to be up on the latest and greatest tactics and techniques. I mean, a great example of this, Star Trek III. Kirk and company are trying to steal the Enterprise, so how do they pull it off? Mr. Scott goes out and sabotages the Excelsior, okay? And he has a line that when he talks to Dr. McCoy, he says, the more complicated they make things, the easier it is to overtake the plumbing. And that's really what it comes down to, is all of the basic concepts that make computers work haven't changed in the last 20 years. They just have had things added up on top of them. But if you understand the fundamentals very, very, very well, understanding the other things comes very naturally. Mike, this for you, PowerShell. How did you learn PowerShell? Walk us through that.
I had a job, and I was looking for something new, something to add to my toolkit, and a buddy of mine had a position open up for a scripter for VBScript and PowerShell. And at the time, I knew what variables were, I knew what object-oriented programming was, but that was about it. Like, my experience with scripting was editing other people's scripts, and, you know, fake it till you make it. I took the job and jumped in, and I just started learning. I wanted to understand how things worked and why they worked and how I could manipulate them to do other things that I wanted to do. I didn't want to just change my script. The script would run, hey, cool, you know, move on to the next one. I wanted to know how the individual parts worked, and I would take the classes and the functions and all that, and I would look them up on MSDN, and I would read through the entire documentation of it and find out other properties and methods that were available to me that I could change or use in the future. And I 100% agree with that, is, you know, not knowing just, you know, something works great, but knowing the intricacies of it, how it works, and how you can change it to do other things that you want to do is hugely valuable. And honestly, just that thirst for knowledge, if you can, one of the things I always tell people is, if you can teach yourself, or you know how you learn, you can practically do anything that you really set your mind to. You don't have to be, you know, the end-all be-all, like, technical. Obviously, that's going to help, but you can learn everything that you need if you have a passion for it and if you have a desire to do that.
I mean, just so that your listeners are aware of this, you know, you don't have to be some grizzled old fart like me. I mean, I'm going to be 40 years old in 2 days. Mike, how old are you?
30.
There you go. And there's lots of guys who do this that are this. And I'll be honest, I tell all my students this. This is a young man's game. the best penetration testers and the fastest ones that I have encountered are typically around 22 to 26 years old. I mean, they are, this is not, I mean, being an older person obviously gives you an advantage with experience, so you can put pieces together and go, yeah, okay, I understand this. I've been there, done that. But there are young people in this game that are way faster and way smarter than me, and my ego is healthy enough that I can say that.
100%.
So that is an interesting topic. Do you think that it's something we lose as we get older, or is that a nature of that age group of the people that grew up on computing more so than we did?
Okay, so I remember hearing about this several years ago. Was it the profile of the typical malware author was Russian, 18 years old, unemployed, and had lots of free time and was brutally intelligent and no girlfriend. As soon as any of those variables altered, their productivity hit the floor. So I would say, you know, for those of us who are getting older, it's really less that we lose it and more that, you know, real life steps in and we have a mortgage, we have jobs, we have wives, uh-huh. we have children, we have responsibilities. And for me, that's really what I find slows me down. Yes, to a certain degree, I can tell you I have experienced what I call a calcification of the brain. I have lost a step or two from when I was 18 or 19 years old. But I've made up with it with my body of knowledge, and my skill set is immense compared to where I was back then. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, six of one, half dozen of the other. Getting old doesn't have to be a dirty word, if you know what I'm trying to say. It just happens. And the reason why I'm not one of the best and the best and the best is, one, I am a little slower, and two, I have a life. You know, I'm not going to let my family suffer because I wanted to go and study reverse engineering, which I know is very much one of my weak points. So when I go to NetWars or I do CTFs, I make sure to pick people on the team who have the background that I don't. You know, that's how I compensate.
Yeah. And I think
to
that's
the point of the
go ahead.
Sorry, to the point of the experience is what I've found too is you don't have to have encyclopedic knowledge of everything ever, right? Just having the exposure to something and being able to pick it out and, you know, oh, I know some of these words. And I found that a lot of it comes back a lot quicker just having that general exposure to something. Or I can quickly read through a document or an article and sum it up and be like, oh, yeah, it was a good refresher. I'm back in it. You know, you don't need to completely memorize and just cram your brain full of everything. But, you know, being a lot younger, I could have, you know, I could go through and I could get that exposure to so many other things just based on, like Quinn said, the free time. You know, I find now that I have a lot of other things that I like to do, and I can't just sit down in the basement in my dungeon for, you know, 10, 12 hours just parsing through whatever I can get my hands on.
Yeah, and I think it's that way kind of with...
My wife would have my head if I did that.
It's that way kind of with any organization where we need to make, even in our corporate environments, the best team comes from the varying skill sets of many different expertises.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
And honestly, something else I might add to that is especially for corporate, if you're trying to build a good cybersecurity team, understand and realize that the best talent likely does not live, or rather the best talent for the position you're looking for does not live in the city you are recruiting in. So being flexible for geographic locations is important. Any business that is not flexible and says you have to relocate or you have to be in this city is losing out on the best talent and is a dinosaur and will suffer security-wise for it if they aren't flexible.
That's a good point. So if we took you guys' experience and what you've seen in the industry, you know, what's the latest trends? What do you expect to see happening? What should we be concerned about? What should we preempt for in our organizations? You know, what attacks might we even, you know, be the worst or the things that should worry us the most?
Stupid users, man.
Phishing. 100% phishing for me.
Phishing attacks.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, users are and always will be the weakest link in the security chain. They'll click on links, they'll open stuff, they'll try to be helpful, and they'll fall for it. The biggest thing, because everybody always wants to get up on, you know, shadow brokers. They're releasing their new batch of 0 days. They've got their 0 day subscription for $21,000 a month. That's a distraction. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like MS-1710 is a big one. Everybody's losing their head over WannaCry. That was patched back in March. If you can't get that patched in your organization, you know, between March and May, that's what, 2 months? If your patching, you know, cadence is that far out that you can't fix something like that, you pretty much deserve what's going to happen, especially if you're exposing TCP 445 to the internet. These are the users are the biggest problem. They're going to do stupid things. They're going to forward emails. They're going to click links. Security awareness training that works, I think, is the single biggest priority that we ought to focus on in our industry. What is that? You know, how do we do that? And you know, most people, they just think, you know, annual security, watching 30 minutes of videos and clicking yes, I will comply is sufficient, and it's not.
That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, hands, like, well, one of the things I always try to talk to people about is, at my company is, you know, security is not just my job. Security is everybody's job. And it's a hard sell because that's what they're paying me for, but, you know, I'm trying to get them to do my job, but at the same time, it makes sense where if you have people who just, oh, I can click on whatever I want, you know, the cybersecurity center is going to take care of me, no big deal, right? It's not true, you know. They need to also be aware that their actions have repercussions, that, you know, that they are a part of securing our company and our organization. And you need to actively fish your users. You know, they need that instant realization of, oh, I clicked on a phishing email, and you know, the program that you have should alert them immediately. And, you know, if you have repeat offenders, you should fish them more often. Mm-hmm. They should be aware that they are a target and that people want to attack them. You know, a lot of what we deal with is, oh, you know, why do they want my computer? I don't have anything on it. Well, you know, they don't quite understand the whole gravity of the situation. But if you can get them to understand that it's a very serious thing, and you train them and you teach them that, you know, how to identify a phishing email, I spent a lot of time in that. And, you know, doing simple things like don't let your users have admin rights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that goes a long way. There's small things that you can do that are, you know, not going and spending, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions on a new tool. You know, it's more of best practices and just, you know, security posture changes, things that you can do, like the critical controls that you can put into place that, you know, may take some effort and some culture change, but don't necessarily have to come out of the budget.
Yeah. So what do we think about, been a lot of ransomware, and I hear all the time that that's the biggest threat nowadays. Do you guys see that that's going to continue to increase, or?
Well, it's a crime of opportunity. I mean, it's low hanging fruit, right? They, you know, they go in, they make a quick buck, and they're out. It's, you know, it's low investment and, you know, low payout, but, you know, there's a lot of criminals who are lazy. You know, they just want to get what they can and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the old model used to be get in, pillage the computers, steal any financial data, maybe logins for banks, et cetera. I mean, we still see that model on mobile devices. There's a ton of malware that seeks out mobile banking apps, steals credentials, or piggybacks access to it, and they utilize that. But ransomware, yeah, that's an easy in, easy out. You know, it's like the WannaCry guys. You know, the first iteration of WannaCry, the only reason that the malware author was identified is because humans are creatures of habit. You know, shout out to Jake Williams for that talk he gave at SANS. You know, he described how there was that password in WannaCry that was hard-coded.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an Eastern European gaming forum that had been compromised, I don't know how long ago, and the password database was posted online. Well, that password that was in WannaCry happened to be a password that was contained in that dump. And so you correlate that password with the username, and that username was reused on MySpace. And now we know who the author of the original WannaCry was, because he reused the password. And some kid in Ukraine, I mean, he's got his, you know, pictures of him, his MySpace page, you know, going back to 1998. But you get the idea. It's the users. I mean, ransomware and all that is a threat, yes, but it goes back to users clicking on things and doing things they shouldn't be. And until the user problem is at least properly addressed, you know, I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
I mean, something else I'd like to share. I hope this is appropriate because I'm not going to name and shame companies, but there's tons of security awareness training companies that do training that doesn't work because it's what corporation heads, CEOs, and et cetera, they get impressed by the shiny presentations, but they don't actually sit down to look at the psychological side of it. Why do users click on this stuff? What motivates them? And how do we teach them? When is the best time to teach them? You know, how do we do that? And there's very, very, very few companies that do it right. One of them is PeopleSec, but there's a ton of companies that don't do it right. And until that is fixed, this problem doesn't go away.
Okay. So kind of in closing here, I want to give you both the opportunity to put out anything you'd like people to check out. You said people, what was the name of the training company you mentioned, Quinn?
It's called PeopleSec. The website's peoplesec.org. They've got a really, really good program. I've worked with them. They've got a really good program for educating users and doing security awareness training. It's really impressive. I got to say, go check it out. They don't do a lot of fancy presentations. They're doing a study, actually. I can't recall who the professor is when I talked to them. There's somebody actually sitting down and doing a doctoral analysis of the psychological impact of the training they have and how to best teach users to avoid falling for social engineering. So, I mean, they're doing cutting-edge stuff, and it's really fascinating. I encourage people to check it out.
Okay. Anything else that you'd like to get out, either of you, about ways people can interact with you, get a hold of you, products that you're involved with, things like that?
Mike, what do you got? I'll let you go first.
I don't really have a whole lot of social media. I kind of have like a low internet presence, just the nature of the job kind of a thing. But, you know, if people want to get a hold of me, and they can get a hold of you, and you can get a hold of Quinn, and he knows how to get a hold of me, so we can sort of do a contact that way.
Yeah, we do a tag team. I've always said that social media will be the downfall of Western civilization, but I do have somewhat of a presence on there. You can look me up on LinkedIn, Quinn Kuzmich, Quinn Kuzmich. Hit me up over there. If anybody wants to reach Mike or anybody else that was on the team for NetWars West in San Diego, more than welcome to reach out to me. There's tons of projects that I'm involved in. Like anybody, once you're involved in this industry, really big success does not come from being somebody's employee, but you know, transitioning to employer and doing consulting work. So there's tons of stuff out there. Hit me up if anybody's got any questions. I'm more than happy to help you out.
All right. Well, thanks both of you for joining. And if you also want to connect with them, you can do it through our show, New Cyber Frontier or Logic Central Online. But thanks a lot for joining today, both of you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.